This is the Dairy Download, brought to you by Blumlingen Associates and the International Dairy Foods Association, where we offer extra sharp market and policy insights on dairy. I'm your host, Phil Plourd.
And I'm your co-host, Kathleen Wolfley.
Today's episode takes us to South Dakota. First, we speak with a consultant who helps producers and processors pave the way to doing business in the state. Then, we talk to an executive from a long-standing South Dakota cheese plant. First, as always, thanks to our listeners. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe through your favorite platform. And why not tell a friend? We continue to get positive feedback, which we love. Share your thoughts with us at dairydownload@idfa.org. Okay, Kathleen, where are we now?
Well, Phil, it is Wednesday, July 21st. The CME cheddar block market landed today at $1.52, down 22 cents on the week. Cheddar barrels finished at $1.37, also down 22 cents on the week. CME butter closed at $1.73, up 2 pennies. And the CME non-factory milk market closed at $1.24, unchanged. All right, Phil, I think that the most important thing in the marketplace right now is logistics. We've been talking about it for a while. The cost to move product across the country has already been expensive, and it just keeps getting even more pricey. The early July data out of DAT points to reefer truck rates above $3.15 per mile. So if we put that on a cost to move cheese per pound from, let's say, California to Wisconsin, that's about 16 cents per pound of cheese, up about a nickel from the same time last year. What do you think is the most important thing right now?
Well, you mentioned in the rundown that barrel cheddar is at $1.37 per pound as of today. And it's the first time we've been below 140 since the end of February. And I think that the real test here is, you know, can we catch some additional export bids? As the market has come down, it appears as though we've stirred some interest internationally. The global pricing picture is kind of mixed. So 137 barrels and where blocks are is pretty cheap right now. And we'll see what happens with that in the weeks ahead.
I think logistics is definitely on the table there too. It certainly doesn't seem like the shipping logistics have gotten any easier or better.
No, I think it plays a role in both the export activity as well as the flat price of cheese in Chicago. The freight costs are way above the board rates. And so there's incentive to move cheese through Chicago as a function of that. Someone's got to pay the freight. And some of that does come out of the flat price. And I think that's certainly playing a role in where we are today. What is your stat of the week, Kathleen?
My stat of the week is U.S. housing starts. So in June, we saw housing starts up 6% year over year, with most of that growth coming out of places like the West and the South. I think the Midwest and Northeast not seeing quite as much growth, if at all. And you know, when we think about these U.S. housing starts or just overall construction, we continue at the same time to still see shortages of available homes, especially for first-time home buyers. So construction is increasing, but still not enough places for people to live, apparently. How about you?
Yeah, so my stat of the week ties together two of the three things we've been talking about. Deals with inflation. The consumer price index for June of 2021 came in up 0.9% versus May. That was the biggest month-to-month increase since June 2008, certainly stirring up inflation talk. And so when we talk about logistics costs being way up, when we talk about housing starts, one of the reasons that we're aggressively building houses is because there's a short supply and housing prices are way up. Housing is actually the number two component, or shelter is the number two component in the CPI data. And so there's a lot of talk about inflation and how quickly and how wide it's spreading. I'm not 100% convinced that the world is on fire there. Food inflation in grocery stores was up modestly month to month and year over year. And then you look at certain commodity prices like barrel cheddar. We'll bring that back into the mix. You know, dairy prices are not way up. Lumber prices have fallen back down to earth. Crude oil seems to be under control. So the inflation story continues to be important and fascinating, but hardly conclusive. But 0.9% month-to-month growth drove a lot of headlines.
It's a crazy world out there. Understatement of the century. Sorry.
Yeah. That's okay. We'll accept it. Do you have a fearless prediction?
My fearless prediction for this week has to do with cold storage data that we get on Thursday, July 22nd. Typically, we see about a 6 million pound decline in total cheese stocks between May and June, and I'm going to take the over. I think that we'll probably see steady to higher stocks from month to month. How about for you, Phil?
I'm going to stay in the cold storage lane, Kathleen. Butter stocks come out at the same time. A month ago, we predicted that stocks would be over 400 million pounds of butter as of May 31st, came in at 402 million. Historically, butter stocks drop by a little bit less than a million pounds between May and June. I'm going to take the over on that. I don't know that we've built stocks aggressively, but I would be looking for something like 405 million, just a slight increase and a little counter to the trend. I still think there's a lot of butter in storage.
All right, well, let's get to our first guest.
We are lucky today to have Paul Kosboth with us. Paul is owner and manager of A1 Development Solutions, a company he founded in 2017. A1 Development offers site development, project management, and land brokerage services for South Dakota's ag sector. Before venturing out with A1, Paul was the state of South Dakota's Director of Ag Development. Paul, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Thank you, Phil. Good morning, everybody. I appreciate the chance to be on with you today.
So, Paul, what's your background with South Dakota's ag and dairy industries?
So I grew up on a small family farm west of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and also worked throughout my high school years on a neighbor's 100-cow dairy, which was by far the largest dairy in our area at that time. Then after college, I spent 12 years at South Dakota Housing Development Authority before getting back into agriculture and dairy in December of 2012 when I was asked to serve as the Director of Ag Development.
100-cow dairies are not something that you generally see in South Dakota much anymore, right?
Not anymore. It was a real eye-opener for me when I got back into ag in 2012 and started to hear what the size of dairies were then at that time.
Would you say that ag is succeeding in South Dakota? And why do you think that? How does South Dakota make it easier for processors and producers?
You know, I think most people believe in the industry that it in South Dakota has been really making tremendous strides in the past decade or so, especially on the dairy side where there's been a 20-plus year drive now. You know, started well before my time to expand the dairy herd here. You know, not only have we historically been in a unique position here of having a high volume milk processing demand, but also we produce some of the best dairy feed in the nation across a wide stretch of available acres. You know, for both producers and processors, so long as you play by the rules and meet all regulatory requirements in South Dakota, you'll not only get a permit, but in a very timely manner. Which is a big deal because a lot of folks coming here have not had that luxury for a long time. And so if you can turn around a permit here in, say, 90 days with the state versus years and years in somewhere like California, that's a really big deal.
Apart from farm size, what are some of the other notable changes you've seen over the years in the South Dakota dairy industry?
You know, so aside from the ever-increasing sizes and the technology that's evolving so rapidly in dairies today, I'd say the most notable change I've witnessed in my time now being involved is how we've gone from recruiting cows to keep up with processing demand to really the exact opposite. And this success in production growth didn't just fill up the plants, but allowed our current processor to expand significantly in recent years. And it's just almost unreal how fast they've already filled up. And now producers are being forced to halt plans to come here because there's simply no more room for the milk right now, once again, even after these recent expansions.
Yeah, it's sort of a real neat example of what we call smart growth, or it's really kind of orchestrated growth between the processors and the producers. And you don't see that in a lot of areas, to be honest with you. But talk about the development process from the dairy plant processor side of the equation.
Yeah, you know, there was a large processing capacity here already before my time, as I had mentioned. But the thing there was for them trying to get full. The plants were all operating well under capacity, and they worked collaboratively with the rest of the industry and with the state to go out and recruit more cows. It was really a large collective effort of everybody working together for the same common cause.
Thinking back on your time as South Dakota's Director of Ag Development, what were some of the challenges and priorities that you tackled on behalf of the dairy industry?
You know, when I first came into the department, we commonly were saying, and I heard often, hey, we support local control. And we wholeheartedly did. However, when we stopped and just asked ourselves, hey, what are we actually doing to actively support local control? The honest answer was simply not much. So from there, we kind of shifted our focus and committed ourselves to getting out there to truly start working at the local level well in advance of these projects ever coming to their door. And I'd say over the long run, that proactive approach really has gone a long ways in turning the corner on local level permitting. You know, now fast forward to today, and I certainly don't want to jinx anyone here and certainly wouldn't say permitting has become a slam dunk by any means. But over the last few years, if I look just at our team, we've led the charge on permitting of around 55,000 cows worth of new permit capacity here in South Dakota. And every one of those projects has been overwhelmingly supported by commissioners. And this is across numerous counties. But we feel the key to that really is, again, being proactive, being an open book, and also finding the right sites for the right projects and being willing to walk away from the ones that just simply aren't the right spots.
Thinking about some of these local permitting issues and really trying to grow locally, what do you see as the risk of not in my backyard type issues in South Dakota? We see it in other locations like the Northeast, the Midwest. Do you find it's an issue in South Dakota?
Yeah, you know, I think it's an issue everywhere. As you point out, you know, a big advantage we have now is having so many of these new modern larger dairies here. We can give tours, let people, you know, kick the tires, so to speak, and become familiar with it before we try to bring one into their area.
So what do you see as some of the major issues that are top of mind for producers today?
You know, I would say today the number one issue for all the producers we're working with that are either already here or looking to come here is the processing capacity. They're afraid of not only not being able to continue to grow here in the short term, but also what will happen to milk prices here over the long term if we can't maintain that reasonable balance in between production and demand and keep capacity growing along with production. That's a big deal right now because everybody here is full.
And Paul, specifically, how does A1 work with dairy producers and processors today? Where do you fit the process and how do you help pave the road, so to speak?
When I left the Department of Ag to start A1 in May of 2017, the vision was to finish the job that the state and all of our industry partners had started in bringing the nation's top producers to South Dakota. And so by being on the private side of these efforts, we now get to work directly for and with the producers and the processors once they are here and wanting to make the investments. And we get to be completely hands-on in a way, again, that we couldn't do as state employees. So I guess to try to summarize it in a title, so to speak, would be owner's rep for these projects is kind of the role we serve. We just become part of the project and do whatever needs to be done to ensure their success.
Interesting stuff, Paul. Thank you so much for being part of the Dairy Download.
My pleasure. I appreciate the invite and enjoyed visiting with you guys today.
Now let's get the processor perspective.
We're really lucky today to have Jason Mitchell as our guest. Jason is Vice President of Sales and Milk Procurement for Valley Queen Cheese Company based in Milbank, South Dakota. In that role, he oversees Valley Queen's milk procurement policies and develops new markets for the company's dairy products. Jason, welcome to the Dairy Download.
Great. Thanks for having me today, Phil.
It's an amazing story. Can you tell us what brought Valley Queen to South Dakota?
Yeah, I really think it's one of the great American success stories. Two Swiss immigrants were cheesemakers in Wisconsin in the late 1920s. They decided to strike off on their own, find a home outside of the crowded Wisconsin cheesemaking industry. They had their mindset on going to Southwest Montana to start a cheese factory. One partner, Alfred Gunzenbach, decided to go scout a site in Montana, drove across Wisconsin, drove across Minnesota, got to Milbank, South Dakota, and stopped for gas. And as they say, the rest is history. The locals talked them into staying the night, finding a spot for their cheese factory in Milbank. Never went any further west, found a site that day, and went back, found his partner Alfred Neff, and they started their business on March 1st, 1929. If you know your history well, it was 28 days before the great stock market crash of 1929, but they survived and thrived in Milbank, South Dakota.
So what makes South Dakota, as it turns out, such a good area for Valley Queen?
Yeah, I think there's a few things. One, it certainly seems to be a great place to dairy. There's ample feed supply, ample water supply, and we've got really progressive processors. I think we've proven that we've had a willingness to invest in the industry over the years. We really view our relationship with our producers as a partnership. So as long as they continue to invest, we have a commitment to invest. And I think the other milk buyers in the region have done the same.
Can you talk to us a little bit about Valley Queen's relationships with its producers?
Yeah, I think we have a unique relationship that's maybe different than some other regions. We only have 40 producers, and those 40 producers produce 5 million pounds a day of milk. So there's a real mutual reliance because we have such large producers, and there are really limited processing options in our region. So there's this mutual reliance where our producers know that we have to have this real close relationship. And I think that lends itself to really good communications. We work hard to communicate, to be transparent with our producers on what our plans are. And we ask them for the same so that we don't have surprises on either big increases or dips in our milk supply.
I've had the privilege and pleasure of meeting a lot of Valley Queen producers over the years. I've joked at times that it's like the United Nations of Valley Queen. The company has done a lot to attract dairies to the area over the years. Can you talk a little bit about what Valley Queen and others have done to recruit farmers to South Dakota? How do you recruit them? Where do you find them? And how's that process gone?
Yeah, I think there's really been two major recruiting efforts over the years. The first was in the late 90s and early 2000s. Our company, along with the former Davisco company and Land O'Lakes, made several trips to Europe, to some of the European trade shows, recruiting European dairymen and I guess showing them the promise of South Dakota and the growth opportunities where maybe they were limited in their growth opportunities and growth prospects in Europe. That was a very successful effort. We had about 25 to 30 dairymen that came over from Europe and put down roots in eastern South Dakota, and that worked really well. That really slowed down in the late 2000s, and then we and the entire industry in South Dakota kind of quickly pivoted to recruiting California and other Western dairymen that were also facing limited growth prospects for, you know, a variety of reasons in the West. And many of them have now started to expand their operations into South Dakota. And that's really what has fueled the boom we've had of the last few years.
I've driven across South Dakota a couple times, stopped at the Corn Palace in Mitchell, South Dakota. What's the special sauce about the region? And I guess on the flip side, what kind of challenges do producers in South Dakota face?
Yeah, I think the special sauce is really that close relationship that we're able to have with producers. I think the independent nature of so many dairymen really fits well with that independent entrepreneurial spirit we have at Valley Queen. So I think that's a good marriage. You know, if I were to point to challenges, I would say, you know, probably what's going on right now is the biggest challenge, which is, you know, our plant is full right now. The recent expansion at the AgriPure plant in Lake Norden I understand that to be pretty full as well. So I think now dairymen are kind of faced with that prospect or that challenge of, man, the processors are full and I want to keep building. And how do I do that? So I think South Dakota now has reached the point that, you know, many other fast growth states have, is the dairy production side of the business has grown faster than the processing can keep up.
And what do you attribute to some of that fast growth? Is it the expansion in plant capacity in the region? Is it something more?
The easy answer on the fast growth is the economics have been at least reasonable on the farm for an extended period of time. So I think that has driven it. And then I think just some of the other things. The farms that are being built today are extremely efficient. The genetics just keep getting better. So there's kind of this flywheel of why the production side is growing so rapidly. And then on the flip side, the processing side, you know, as you guys are well aware, the capital investments are, required to process that milk are really, really large. And it's hard to do it in small incremental steps. It's big chunks at all at a time. And so there's always this kind of delicate dance between, you know, how fast can processing go to match up with really fast production growth. And, you know, South Dakota hasn't been immune to that trouble.
So, Jason, the past 5 to 10 years in South Dakota have been really exciting. You know, lots of growth, lots of great things happening. From where you sit, what do you see over the next 5 years? Where are we going to be 5 years from now?
I think it's really going to hinge on what the next processing decision looks like. There will pretty much have to be a major processing announcement made for there to be this continued growth in South Dakota. But I think the milk will be there. I think we have a good environment for doing it. I think the processors are just going to have to decide, is there the right economic decision to be made to build further processing in South Dakota?
Well, Jason, we really appreciate you joining us on the Dairy Download.
Great. I appreciate it. It was a nice conversation. Have a great day.
That's a wrap for today's show. As always, we want to thank our production team, Michael Gooden and Andrew Jerome at IDFA, and Corey Romero over here at Blimling & Associates. If you are interested in what Kathleen and I do for our day jobs, check us out at www.dairy.com. And we gathered some new friends into the family recently. See all of that at ever.ag. If you want to share feedback on our show, drop us a line at dairydownload@idfa.org, and be sure to hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform.
Thanks for listening to the Dairy Download. Until next time, stay sharp.